Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
Don't send any money for daycare because the United States can't take care of daycare. That has to be up to a state. We can't take care of daycare. We're a big country. We have 50 states. We have all these other people. We're fighting wars. We can't take care of daycare. You got to let a state take care of daycare, and they should pay for it, too. They should pay. They have to raise their taxes, but they should pay for it. And we could lower our taxes a little bit to them to make up. But it's not possible for us to take care of daycare. Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things, they can do it on a state basis. You can't do it on a federal. We have to take care of one thing, military protection. We have to guard the country. But all these little things, all these little scams that have taken place, you have to let states take care of them, Russell, and you have to do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Medicare and Medicaid ain't a little thing. Healthcare ain't a little thing. And by the way, nobody wants to hear that from a president that miraculously finds $800 million to $2 billion a day, all right, to spend on a war. But you couldn't come up with $1 billion over the last month to pay TSA workers. Ain't nobody trying to hear that. I know I'm not. But I'll talk about that on my own after I talk to my next guest. Oh, my goodness. I've been waiting for her to come on the show. One of the most wonderful women I know in politics. She is a veteran political strategist, New York Times bestselling author, and Emmy and Peabody Award-winning media contributor who previously served as interim chair of the Democratic National Committee and the DNC's Voting Rights Institute. She is now a member of the DNC Rules and Bylaws Committee and, of course, an ABC News contributor. She is the wonderful, the marvelous, the incomparable, the one and only Donna Brazile, right here with Straight Shooter and Stephen A. How you doing, Donna? Good evening. How's everything?
Well, you know, I've been one of your fans out loud and just happy to be on this call. I don't know if you know this, but when I knew one of your producers, and I actually lobbied him. I have never lobbied anyone. As you well know, when you have an ABC contract, you can't really go outside the box. And when I got this invitation, I told him, I want to do this. So I am so grateful to be here. And thank you for all of the good work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Let's get right to it. I mean, you saw Trump sat in today on the Supreme Court arguments on birthright citizenship. From your estimation, how effective, if effective at all, do you think his appearance was today?
I don't think his appearance made any difference in the oral arguments that I heard from both the Solicitor General or the conversation that was later held by the ACLU that presented their arguments. I think the justices came in there well prepared to ask the tough questions. The precedent that we've known over the last century and a half, all of the congressional acts, and also what the Supreme Court itself has done. So I don't think he made an impression on them, but maybe he just wanted to get outside the White House while it was under construction and get a little fresh air by going to the Supreme Court. Perhaps he wanted to just take a ride around the cherry blossoms that are still blooming. Whatever reason, I'm not one to say what the president should do with his time, but I don't think he made a difference today.
How about this notion that he was there because he wanted to remind American citizens he's paying attention to what the hell is going on in this country, you know, on our soil, as opposed to doing business in the Middle East all the damn time or engaging in warfare? How about that notion?
Well, look, given the stakes right now in the Middle East and the Gulf, I think the president should be focused 24/7 on what's happening there. He needs to figure out what is our strategy. Will we be able to de-escalate? Will Iran agree to the ceasefire, the principles that we have put forward? And essentially, how do we rebuild alliances? The president has a lot of things to answer for. And hopefully, with his address to the nation, he will be able to tell us what's going on and what is the end game. You don't get into a war without a strategy to win and to be able to claim victory. And I think the president is willing to claim victory without a strategy to end it.
He's been seeking help from NATO, and we've heard him and to a lesser degree Secretary of State Marco Rubio complaining about the lack of assistance they've received from NATO. And as a result, we've heard notions and you know, just hints about pulling out of NATO and things of this nature. What are your thoughts about that? Is he justified to some degree in bringing that up? Because one would think, considering the money that the United States of America has poured into NATO and the assistance it's provided NATO, you would think that NATO would be more receptive to something that the United States wants, no matter who's in the Oval Office. Nevertheless, that's not the case right now, it appears. What do you think about their position with regard to NATO?
Well, first of all, let's make sure that we understand that France has helped in some of the defensive strategies. Turkey has knocked down a couple of the drones and helping some of its neighbors. And of course, the UK allowed the United States to use Diego Garcia, a remote base way out in the Indian Ocean. So they have not completely sat on their hands. And after all, Zelensky has come forward and said, look, I know how to get those drones out the sky. I know how to do it cheaply and more effective. And the White House dismissed that and instead gave Russia the ability to sell it all on the market for a couple more days, 10 more days. So I think the allies really wanted to be consulted. I think the allies wanted to know the strategy. The allies wanted to understand, you know, exactly how after degrading the Iranian missile capabilities, after removing or killing the Ayatollah and his family, they wanted to have a better idea of what the United States was doing and what was our plan, you know, the day after the bombs stopped falling.
Donna Brazil, the wonderful Donna Brazil, political strategist extraordinaire, contributor to ABC News right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. You know, I want to get to another subject that's near and dear to your heart, and that's the Democratic Party. I mean, few are more qualified than you on the planet to talk about the Democratic Party and what's going on with them right now. How do you feel about the state of affairs within the Democratic Party at this particular moment in time as we speak, just less than a year away from the midterms? How are you feeling about your party right now?
You know, I was in class today. I teach at Georgetown University, been at 24
yes,
years.
You do.
And I told my students that a year ago, I was really feeling somewhat awful. The defeat in 2024 wasn't just a loss of the presidency and, of course, control of Congress and so much more. It was a failure of imagination to understand in the 21st century, you cannot run 20th century campaigns. You cannot be a candidate or a political party that continue to invest in six or seven states and expect a miracle across the country. We lost ground. We lost the ability to hold together a 30-plus year coalition that the Democratic Party was able to create over the past 30 years and enable the victory of Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, of course. Well, you know, I'm going to not talk about Al Gore because we lost by 537 votes in Florida, and that was our fault, and I'll talk about that one day. But look, the fact is the Democratic Party is in the process of rebuilding. We're rebuilding. It's like a car that needed renovation. It's like a house that needed to be totally, you know, built back from the studs up. The party is rebuilding. And the way you rebuild is state by state. It's not a national campaign that we have to focus on right now. We got to focus on these campaigns in the states. We got to focus on the what I call some of the down ballot races. And over the last year, Democrats have been able to flip over 30 special elections, 30, Republicans zero. And that's because we're running better candidates. We got to we fine tune our message, whether it's affordability or talking directly to the American people about their hopes and aspirations. We're showing up where it matters. But, you know, let me just tell you this. We're a long way from the midterms. And the midterms, as you well know, I don't want to use a sports analogy, but I love sports.
Sure.
But the midterms, it's a Super Bowl. I mean, that is the ball game. If we fail to take back one or both branches, the House or the Senate, if we fail to, you know, expand our reach in terms of gubernatorial seats, it's going to be very difficult for 2028. So this is the year that the Democratic Party has to focus on not only winning down ballot races, but focus on rebuilding, retooling, and rebranding the national party itself.
Is it really necessary to do all of that, Donna?
Yes.
Or could you just sit back and say, let Trump implode? He can't help himself. It'll happen. What about that strategy? You ever thought about that?
Well, look, we all talk about Donald Trump 24/7. We've been talking about Donald Trump for the last 10 years. And what have we received from just talking about Donald Trump? No, the Democratic Party has to reconnect with the voters that they want to represent. That's why it's important that we run candidates, not just at the federal level, but also at the state level. We have, you know, more than 10,000 school board races. Let's make sure that we run school board races across the country, city council races, mayoral races, judicial races, not just as what I call the hot, shiny, bright object, like who's running for the Senate, who's running, you know, for the House. But let's make sure that we can build something underneath us. And if we can do that, then we can replicate what the Republicans have been able to do over the last 10 years with Donald Trump as the head of their political party.
You've said publicly, when the Democrats go too far left, many voters feel left out. I got that quote from doing some research on you. You're basically publicly acknowledging that Democrats need to move a little bit towards the center. But does the party listen? At this stage, does the party listen?
You know, look, New York is different from my beloved hometown of New Orleans, okay?
Sure.
And New Orleans is different from San Francisco. San Francisco is different from St. Louis. We have to meet the moment. And when the party goes too far in one direction, as we've seen in the Republican Party, when you go too far in one direction, then it's hard to bring people from the middle to your point of view or your political coalition. So we have to meet the moment. And the majority of Americans are not registered Democrats or registered Republicans. They are independent, unaffiliated voters, and they want pragmatic, common sense, authentic politicians. They're not looking for firebrands. Now, you talk about a lot of my friends who are firebrands. They're hotter than Tabasco. But the American people are not looking for hot sauce. They're looking for somebody who can bring home not just the bacon, the eggs, the grits, the gravy. They want somebody who can deliver. And all of this happy talk about, you know, standing this far to the left or standing this far to the right, it's not meeting the moment of the American people. We're going to fall further and further behind. And I know you care about this. I'm worried about the fact that we're engaged in a war that's going to cost well over maybe $200-300 billion at a time when
that's
we
right.
should be reskilling our workforce, focusing on the productivity, growth, AI. How do we train our young people for a future that looks different from when you and I were growing up? So we got so much on our plate, but our politicians are not meeting the moment. And we don't need somebody from the far left or the far right. We need people who understand how to cross that aisle and get things done.
You know of anybody within the Democratic Party who falls under that that label, who you look at definitively and says represents exactly what you said the party needs in order to move the country forward? Is there anybody associated with the Democratic Party that stands out of your mind?
Well, first of all, I've seen Democrats over the last year and a half try to reach out to Republicans to make things happen. And just earlier today, I understand that Mr. Johnson, and by the way, he's from Louisiana. He's a proud LSU graduate. So am I. Mr. Scalise, a proud LSU graduate. Same here. I mean, they understand that they have to reopen the entire department. But they also saw what happened in the United States Senate with that unanimous vote. So the House will come back next week and they will vote on that Senate bill. That's victory. But in order for that to pass, because so many of the quote unquote Tea Party, or you want to call them the Freedom Caucus or the MAGA crowd, they will vote against their own interests. And so the Democrats will have to provide votes. So time and time again, the Democrats are not afraid to cross that aisle and provide the votes necessary to keep this country and to keep this economy moving and to keep the country safe, because we also have to talk about that as well.
In your in your estimation, is the MAGA movement fracturing?
Yes. I can't tell you. I mean, when I listened to Laura Ingraham, you know, I spent some time on Fox News 4 years. I got criticized for it. But I said, you know what? If I want to talk to myself, well, damn, I'll just go home and talk to my sisters and brothers. But I want to talk to people across the aisle. I want to hear their ideas. Right. I want to hear their views. And then if we have to go round the round, fine. But I spent 4 years as a silver fox and I have no regrets. But yes, I'm hearing from Joe Rogan. I'm hearing from Laura Ingraham. I'm listening to Megyn Kelly. I mean, she doesn't agree with me. I'm listening to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm listening because, you know what? They are fracturing. Tucker Carlson, who I work with at CNN back in the day.
Be careful, Donna. Be careful, Donna. I mean, by doing that, you might be considered selling out your community. I know the feeling. You talk to people across the other aisle. You listen to what they have to say. My God, we can't even do that, Donna. Remember well, that. I mean, they said it about me. They wouldn't dare do that to you, though.
I've been canceled so many times. I've gotten fired. I've gotten kicked. I've gotten hit. I've gotten death threats. I mean, you name it. It has come. It has come and it has come to pass. But when you're in politics, when you're in the fire, you know, you have to understand how to stir the pot. And I want to be able to look at someone and say, okay, I can work with you on this issue, but I'm not going to work with you on this issue. And I have my bottom line, I have my red lines, but I also have my value system. I'll never forget, Stephen, when Hurricane Katrina made landfall, my father, who served in the military, 4 Bronze Stars, a UN Medal for Valor in Korea, my father told me to go and talk to George Bush. I looked at him and I said, Dad, guess what? I work for Al Gore, the other guy. He said, I don't care. He said, we need somebody who can rebuild the levees, help us bring back the people who've lost their homes. And my daddy just looked at me and he said, now go and talk to the president. And I found my way into that White House to talk to George W. Bush. At the time, I lost my black card. Now, you know, when you lose that black card, when people think that you have betrayed them, I say, I'm not betraying you. I'm just trying to make sure that I can reopen the schools, rebuild the levees, and make sure that people have a road home back to the best city and the best coast in America, the Gulf Coast. And I did what my father asked me to do. And I'm proud every day, every time I go home. When I'm back home in a couple of days, I'm going to be able to see that VA hospital that I was able to advocate for. I'm going to be able to see Dillard and Xavier and all those other schools that are reopened. And I'm going to be able to see my family who've been able to come back home along with other members of my community. So, yeah, sometimes you have to cross the aisle. Again, you don't have to sell out. You just have to know why you're going to the table. I will go to the table with Steve Scalise, Mike Johnson, and anyone else if I can cut a deal to preserve some of the progress we've made and to make gains that will help the American people succeed.
Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, do you want to be listened to or do you want to be heard? Because guess what? You're going to have to make a difference. In order to pull that off, you're going to have to be heard. And it's going to have to be with people who disagree with you. And you got to listen to them and talk to them and show that you can walk across the aisle and get stuff done. That's just the bottom line. I have to go back to something that you said a little bit earlier, because you talked about prioritizing, keeping our country safe.
Yes.
Obviously, you listen to the GOP. One of the things they lament and they hang their hat on is that former President Joe Biden allowed open borders and so many millions of people to come across our border. And that's contributed so much to the chaos. And the Democratic Party did nothing but allow him to do that. What do you say about that, particularly emanating from the mouths of folks on the right when they say such things, Donna Brazil?
Well, I tell them, you know, criticize Joe Biden all you want, but you didn't criticize Barack Obama and Joe Biden when they deported millions of migrants who came.
3.1.
Thank you.
3.1.
He was called a deporter in chief and quite proud of it. I think under the Biden administration, two things happened. First of all, there was a migration crisis all over the world, not just the United States, but all over the world. And, you know, some of it was due to climate. Some of it was due to what I call activities beyond our control, but it was a failure of imagination once again to understand that something was happening. When you have people from as far away as Africa or as far away as Asia finding their way all the way over to South America and then walking or getting, you know, transportation to the southern border, something was wrong. Democrats have fought for comprehensive immigration reform. That's been our solution to part of the problem. And because we can't find common ground with Republicans, then we have the sore point where one side, you know, essentially they're able to make the argument that we're weak on the board. And the other side is saying, no, but you're not treating people with humanity. You're not treating people with fairness. We need to have a better system set up, a better way to have an intake and output. It was a failure. And we should just give the president credit for what he's done in terms of the border security, but we cannot give him credit on the way that ICE has operated without the proper training, without the proper protocols that we give to other law enforcement. I tell people, I live in Washington, D.C., and just a couple of blocks from my house, we had ICE officials from I don't know, and they all had on masks. And I'm like, dude, it's hot as hell out here. Who are you? I just want to go and say thank you. Who are you? What are you doing? Where are you going? But no, they've made our city just a complete nightmare the way that they went about, you know, trampling on people's rights. None of us knew who would get stopped pulled over because we didn't know what the strategy was. So I hope we can get some common sense reforms. Look like Tom Holman, you know, made some breakthroughs with the Democrats in the Senate. Maybe we can make some breakthroughs with the Democrats in the House, and we can get the votes necessary so that we can get the entire DHS back up and funded.
Right. Just a couple of questions left before I let you go. And thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Anytime,
Donna. You know, Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana was on a few minutes ago, and he called the extreme left portion of the Democratic Party the loon wing, the loony wing, or whatever it is. That's what he was saying, basically talking about how they're running the party, and it's to the detriment of the country because the Chuck Schumers of the world, the Bill Clinton of the world, people like that, it used to be that party. It's no longer. Do you believe he's right in saying that?
Did he name names? I mean, is he just cherry
picking? He said Bernie. He did. No, he did. He said AOC. He said Bernie Sanders. He mentioned those two specifically. I believe he mentioned one more who I don't, Mamdani. And he mentioned Mamdani in New York as the mayor. He mentioned those three names. That's what he said.
Well, first of all, Bernie Sanders, as you well know, is a Democratic socialist who caucus with the Democratic Party. He's not a Democrat. He's run as a Democrat twice. And we now have a rule that in order to run, you must declare yourself to be a Democrat. Bernie Sanders is, I've known Bernie since my Jesse Jackson days, and God knows I go back a long way. And Bernie was, you know, a progressive. He's always been a progressive. He's not going to change, but he's not running the Democratic Party. Yes, there are many followers of Bernie Sanders within the Democratic Party, and I'm sure within the Democratic caucus, like AOC, Congresswoman. But they're elected by the American people. You may not like Bernie Sanders' positions on A through X, but you know what? The people of Vermont have given him their vote and their confidence. And the same is true of AOC. I've never met her. I hope to meet AOC. It's so funny. People talk about the squad. I only know two of the four members of the so-called squad, but they have every right to be in the caucus. And that's why the Democratic Party is a healthy party. We have a big tent. We have conservatives. We have moderates and liberals and progressives. And now a few socialists. And you know what? It will not change the character of the party. The only thing that will change the character of the party is when the voters decide that we are no longer capable of representing their views and their values in the United States Congress or any other office we hold.
But didn't the voters already do that by electing Trump? Because I'm one that's been on the record. I don't think Trump won the election in 2024. I think Kamala Harris and the Democrats lost it. Mm-hmm. And you've lamented the fact that the absence of a primary was something that you did not like. I certainly did not like that at all. It bothered the living hell out of me. And I thought that the Democratic Party blew it. It was gift wrapped it to them, and they absolutely blew the election. That's why Trump is back in the White House, because of all the shenanigans they were engaging in leading up to the election. Your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, the American people have been in a foul mood since 2004. The right track, wrong track numbers have been totally off the radar. The American people just dislike politicians. They dislike the politics. And Trump ran as an anti-establishment candidate. Remember back in 2016, you had two anti-establishment populist candidates. On the right, you had Donald Trump, and on the left, you had Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders gave Hillary a hell of a time before she defeated him in the primary. And Donald Trump beat all of those establishment Republicans because the American people looked at him and say, well, you know what? He has nothing to lose. He has his own money. He has his own stature. He has his own plane. So we're going to give our vote to this guy because he doesn't care. And I often tell people that same mood took place in 2008 when the American people said, I will give this Barack Obama, Senate Obama, my vote versus giving it to an establishment Democrat because we want somebody from outside of Washington, D.C. to go and clean up house. So Donald Trump came across as somebody who can come into Washington and clean house. That's what he did in 2016 when he swept through the so-called blue wall. And that's what he did in 2024 when he was able to. Here's what he did in 2024 that Kamala Harris didn't do. And I'm going to just be on the record. Donald Trump went everywhere. He went on podcasts. He went on Substack. He went on radio shows.
He didn't duck.
And by nighttime, he held big rallies. He was everywhere. He was in your face, in your ear. He was present everywhere, every day, 7 days a week, 24/7. He didn't have a down day. Kamala had down days. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris had over 80 million votes in 2020. Kamala only received 75 million. So we cannot blame Donald. We cannot say Donald Trump was the problem. The problem was our inability to go back and talk to those voters and to motivate them to come out once again. We had turnout problems. We had messaging problems. And it didn't just, you know, come about in 107 days. It came about because over 4 years of governing, we spent so much time trying to get the policy right coming out of COVID that we forgot to talk directly to the American people so that they could be involved in the progress we were making. And that was our downfall. And I was sad about it. I was pissed about it. But you know what happens when you lose an election? You get up and you figure out how the other guy or the other girl did better than you, and you get back on the court and you try to whip their ass the next time.
Last question, totally off the subject, but really not. You called the late civil rights leader, Reverend Jesse Jackson, quote, a pioneering figure who gave me wings and fundamentally transformed American politics by laying the groundwork for modern democratic inclusion. As the first black woman to serve as the manager of a major party's presidential campaign when you did it for Al Gore, do you believe the Democratic Party still values the black vote?
Yes and no. I do believe that the vast majority of Democratic office holders, Democratic leaders, Democratic officials and donors really support the black community, but not in ways in which Jesse Jackson envisioned, how we never forget the voters who turn out and give us their votes. I still dislike the fact that Democratic candidates come to the black community 6 weeks before Election Day. How disrespectful. They should be coming to us now. They should be talking to us now. Right. They should be engaging us now. They should make sure that those black voters, like white voters and any other voters that have been purged, that they get the proper identification and they get the proper information so that they can participate in the election. So, yes, there are times in which I scream at my own party, and I've said it up front. I do not like when we're taking our voters for granted. Yes, black people, especially black women, you know, we're the backbone of the Democratic Party. We're the backbone of democracy.
That's right.
But don't come to us 2 weeks out. That's an insult. Start talking to us
now. What I've been saying.
Talk to us now. Engage with us now. And in fact, help us run for office. Help us to, as I mentioned, the 19 city council races, the 18,000 school board races, the 6,000 state legislative races. Help recruit us. Help train us. Help us provide a new generation. What Reverend Jackson did was revolutionary, because you know what he said? You have political power and you can leverage that political power. Let me show you how to do it. That's what he did. And he led by example. And I miss him. He was my brother, my friend. And I have to tell you, Steve, when I left Reverend Jackson campaign to go work for Dick Gephardt, Reverend told me I would be a branch without a tree. And I said, Reverend, that's cold. That's awful. And he said, no, you can't leave me. I said, baby, I got to leave you, because that's what you do. You train me to go out there and to soar. And he, you know, when I became Al Gore's campaign manager and later chair of the Democratic Party, not once, but twice, vice chair for 8 years, you know who called me every day to check on me to see if I need anything? Jesse Jackson.
Yeah.
Good man. I miss him.
So do I. I know him. We talk often. He's a good man. And obviously, we covered it. We saw him at every practice. I mean, he was practically at every sporting event. My goodness, he didn't miss the big one, that's for sure. But Donna Brazile, thank you so much for your time. It was wonderful talking to you. I appreciate the education, as always, just teaching along the way is what you do. Thank you so much. You know you're welcome back on the show anytime. And just a little birdie, I mean, I kind of know a few people at ABC, so you want to come on? Don't worry about it. I can take care of it.
And look, when you're ready to launch your next ride or your next transition, will you give me a call so I can bring you over and I can make you some gumbo and I can tell you how to chew the fat
Let me tell you something. You don't need to tell me that. There ain't no way I'm running without coming to you. That's not going to happen. You understand what I'm saying? It's automatic. But they're trying to take my money, Donna. They're trying to say the minute you equal airtime, the minute you announce that you're trying to do it, we got to pull you off the airways. I can't let them mess with my money. But we'll talk about it.
Well, you and I the same way, honey. But that's why we can talk offline over some gumbo, okay?
Always. Love you. Appreciate
you.
Thank you so much. I'll see you soon.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Happy Easter. You take it easy. The wonderful Donna Brazile, Democratic strategist extraordinaire, contributor for ABC News. This week with George Stephanopoulos, she is the truth and a half. Make no mistake about it. So much. So appreciate her. The wonderful Donna Brazile. To your calls for the rest of the show at 866-967-6887. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with your boy, Stephen A. Back with your calls and more in a minute.